In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Friday today, the 8th of June. Good, as always, to have you along, everybody. It is possible, and I'm not saying probable, but it's possible, that this was one of those weeks that will, in retrospect, turn out to have been a hinge point in the American and global economies. Yes, that is a classic only time will tell kind of thing to say, but it is where we're going to start today. Anna Swanson's with the New York Times. Sudhi Bredi is at Politico. Hey, everybody.
Hey, Kai.
Hey, Kai.
So, Anna, let me start with you and ask you this. The idea of the G6 plus one, which has been bandied about the last, 48 hours or so. We're going to hear from President Reagan, actually, later in the program, some tape of him from 30 years ago. But it's worth a mention that this whole G7 thing was part of a mechanism that the United States helped set up and is now, I was going to say blowing up, but certainly helping to put a big rift in anyway.
That's right. I mean, it's hard to make the Canadians angry, but the president seems to have pulled that off. And it really is a stark contrast to have the American president feuding with allies like Canada and Europe. At the same time, he kind of appears to be making friends and extending concessions to China and North Korea. But it seems to extend from, you know, this America first philosophy and the administration's kind of general skepticism of multilateral institutions. The U.S. is still the most powerful country in the world, but the leading role that we've played in global institutions isn't guaranteed. So yeah. I think some of this calls that into question.
Okay, Sudeep, on that point of saying complacency is dead, President Macron, American trade complacency is dead, which we'll get to in a second. President Macron of France said yesterday in a tweet, I think it was him because you can never tell who's tweeting these days internationally, that taken together, the G6 is still bigger than the United States, so maybe we could just do it without you. What do you think that sounds like?
That's an argument we've heard on other things, like the old TPP trade deal, where other countries are going to say, you know what, if you won't play along, we'll find another path. It is just so jarring to see all of these countries up against the United States right now. For a decade, I've been covering these gatherings. It's been U.S. officials trying to take the high road and get everyone on the same page and united. And finally, all these countries are united, but it's unity against the world's leading superpower. It's just such an ugly divorce that we seem to be witnessing right now. And it's not really clear how you mend that rift that we're seeing in real time.
Anna, there was an op-ed in the I think it was Wall Street Journal, like a year or so ago, from Gary Cohn and H.R. McMaster, both of whom no longer work for the president, but Cohn was the National Economic Council director and McMaster was the National Security Advisor, in which they said America first does not mean America alone. It kind of, and I don't want to lean into this too hard, but there is a little bit of America alone going on here with the six G6 people not thrilled with President Trump.
Right. Well, it's one versus six. I mean, I think the question here is how much weight does the United States really have? I mean, as I was saying, you know, we still are the most powerful country in the world, but we're less powerful than we were 10 years ago. And that sort of leading role isn't necessarily guaranteed. So that was interesting that in a tweet this morning, the president was talking about straightening out unfair trade deals with the G7. But if you look at it, the U.S. actually only has one trade deal with a G7 member, Canada, whereas in the last year, the other members of the G7 have signed a bunch of new trade deals. So, you know, there definitely is a scenario where other countries can move on without the United States. Of course, we're still very influential. But, you know, is that what America first means? I think we'll see.
Sudhip, a word here about geopolitics, right, coming at this from the Washington point of view. Global trade does not happen in isolation. And the president will need the Canadians and the Brits and the Germans, and also, incidentally, the Chinese in other foreign policy goals that I think Secretary of State Pompeo has been talking about.
That's right. It's juggling multiple balls and it's trying to figure out how these leaders are going to do it. There's a long history of them dealing with China this way. You try to push China, try to get China to move closer to the Western alliance, and then you use China to deal with North Korea. The entire chessboard is scrambled here. It's really hard to figure out exactly how this comes out the other side. The president is running a very Trumpian negotiation. He's talking tough. It's not always easy to tell the difference in his negotiating style between the closest allies versus, say, North Korea. It's a lot of tweeting, a lot of tough talk, and not necessarily a lot of calm perspective with obviously not with nuance. So that's a dangerous game to play when everyone is on edge in a moment like this.
On a quick nod to what may conceivably be coming next, if you read the tea leaves in a piece that Peter Navarro, the director of the National Trade Council, had in the New York Times today in the opinion pages, subheadlined, The Era of American Complacency on Trade is Over. There were strong indications in there that car tariffs are next. That's something the president has tweeted about repeatedly in the last 10 days, 2 weeks. There is more to come on trade from this White House, clearly.
It seems like they are not yet satisfied with all the trade measures that they've done. So these car tariffs, I think, are the biggest thing that we would see yet if they do come into force. They're the same kind of tariffs that we've done on steel and aluminum, right, related to this national security claim. But, you know, the automobile industry is many, many times bigger than the steel and aluminum industry even. So the potential to hit close allies like Japan, Europe, again, Canada and Mexico is even more than these steel and aluminum tariffs that are the cause of all of these frosty relations right now at the G7. So if we do go ahead with that, Peter Navarro is suggesting, I think you're going to see much more tension down the road.
This is going to sound flip on it, but it's a completely serious question. Is a BMW made in Spartanburg, South Carolina, a foreign car or an American car?
That's the big question, right? So, I mean, obviously cars are made from all over the world with parts from all over the world. It really is truly a global industry. The Trump administration thinks that, you know, that's not the way that it should be. It should be a more U.S.-centric industry. And that could be an extremely painful process to kind of try to pull those supply chains back into the United States. But it seems that that's what they would like to do.
Worst part of wrapping this up is I didn't even get to Ben Bernanke and Wile E. Coyote. Truly, I didn't. All right. Anyway, got to go. Anna Swanson at The New York Times. She covers global trade there. Sudeep Reddy at Politico. Thanks, you two. Have a nice weekend.
Thank you.
Have a good weekend. Bye.
All right, you guys. Bye-bye. On Wall Street today, traders did kind of mind their own business, actually. Details, numbers, you know the drill.